Good evening and welcome to Sports Takeover. This is RMU Radio and you are listening to Matt and Chris. We are excited to be back, so let's dive right in, Chris. We've been gone for 4 months and a lot has happened. While we've been gone, why don't you get us started on the review of the summer?
Well, when we left, it was only the beginning of May. There was a lot of playoffs to be had still in the NHL and the NBA. Obviously, winners got crowned in that time. We're going to start in the NHL, where for the first time in the history of the NHL and the St. Blues organization, they have won a Stanley Cup after going 0-12 in their previous three cup appearances, which were also, funny enough, in their first 3 years of existence.
Also against the Bruins.
Yes, they got swept every year. They finally came back, played the Bruins, took them to seven games, and claimed the team's first Stanley Cup, being the last original or of the expansion teams since 1967 and 1968. St. Louis was the last one to have not won a cup yet. Here they are. They won a cup.
I didn't think that they had it in them, but it just goes to show how when you're the hottest team in the playoffs, good things happen. And, of course, riding a hot goalie like Jordan Binnington got the job done for them. So good for the St. Louis.
They rode him like a convertible in the summertime on the open highway. It was incredible. But he wasn't even their best player either in the playoffs. He was good enough, obviously, to get them to win, but they did have to play 26 games. They went... The first two of their series were six games. The other two were seven games. So their win percentage was not good by any means, but they did the job. And who did the job the best on their team was Ryan O'Reilly, who won the Conn Smythe after a career year with the Blues. In the playoffs alone, he had 8 goals and 15 assists, which only led the league with 23 points. So scoring, I guess, was down, or maybe it was just more scattered than usual years. Some years you see people with 30 points. But either way, O'Reilly had a great playoffs. That caps off a career year with the Blues. His first year with the team ended up putting up 77 points for the whole year, 13 more than any of his other years. He's just a guy I've liked for many years, finally getting the national recognition that I have had for him forever, mostly because of his great face-off skills, but still, he's a very good player.
Very underrated until now. Now I think he's getting the credit he deserves. We'll move on then to the NBA, where the Raptors also won their championship for the first time in franchise history. They defeated a depleted Warriors team, a Warriors dynasty that... I think a lot of people would have expected to take the NBA title at the beginning of the season, at the beginning of the playoffs. Obviously, no Kevin Durant made that a difficult thing to do. Kawhi Leonard for the Raptors playing fantastic basketball. So the NBA championship goes north of the border.
Yeah, for the first time, too, a Canadian team won. Not that there was many others. The Memphis Grizzlies were in Canada for a brief period of time.
But like a year.
I think most people probably forget about that in the history of the NBA. But Toronto, they had... previously lost to LeBron in the playoffs with the, you know, him being on the Cavaliers the last three seasons. So something had to give when LeBron went to LA, and apparently the entire league gave away for the Raptors. They finished second in the Western or the Eastern Conference this season. Very good record. It was actually a better record than the number one seed Warriors. But yeah, like you said, Kawhi Leonard was just a man on a mission to win. His second finals MVP, previously won one with the Spurs a few years back, but he averaged 30.5 points per game this playoffs. He pretty much led the Raptors in every stat besides assists and blocks. He was just unstoppable. And like you mentioned, the Warriors were very depleted. No Kevin Durant. Klay Thompson tore his ACL in the finals too. Looked like he was ready to come back in, and then obviously he didn't come back. Torn ACL doesn't usually let you come back. So while the Warriors were still, they still had Steph Curry, they still had Draymond Green, it wasn't the same Warriors team that we had seen year in and year out. And this Raptors team was clicking on another level. It's very interesting. They fired their head coach, Dwayne Casey, after he won Coach of the Year the fall previous season. Brought in Nick Nurse, first year. Why would you fire the Coach of the Year for the last season? Well, stuff had to change. DeMar Rosen had to be moved out, and it worked out for him. So a summer of firsts in both the NHL and the NBA. Two fresh new champions. It's great stuff right there.
Yeah, and two very good ways to end the postseason in both of those sports. It was very entertaining to watch, and a little bit of a variety this year for a change. Always nice to see.
Absolutely. Moving through the summer, we also have the Women's World Cup this year. Once again, the United States was basically an unstoppable dominant force throughout all of it. They did not lose a single game. They won their fourth title, and it's their second in a row. They retained their title from the 2015 World Cup. In the three group stage games, they outscored their opponents 18-0. That's just...
It's insane.
Wave the white flag at this point if you're the other teams going on the field. Then the round of 16, they beat Spain 2-1. Quarterfinals, they beat France 2-1. Semifinals, they beat England 2-1. The finals, they did not win 2-1. It was 2-0 defeat over the Netherlands. Megan Rapinoe won both the Golden Ball and Golden Boot for the MVP and scored most goals of the tournament. It was really just the women's U.S. women saying, all right, it's ours. Don't even bother trying anybody else. And they showed it.
Yeah, a total team effort the whole way through the tournament. A 13-0 win in the first one of their, I think their very first game.
Yeah, it was the first game. Set record too.
An unbelievable effort from that entire team and a well-deserved title for them.
And really just shine some light on how bad the men's team is. The women just look like the best players in the world, and the men's team didn't even qualify for the most recent World Cup. So large disparity there. I'd love to see the two sides go against each other, but either way, another title for the U.S. to bring back home. That was most of the summer that has finally ended, but there is one more topic that is still going on, Major League Baseball. A lot has happened since we last talked, but really not as much has changed as I would have hoped or would have thought. So our last show was May 1st. It is now August 28th. I went back to check the standings from May 1st just to see what the difference was between now and then, and it's not as dynamic as I would have liked. Four of the six divisions are still controlled by the same teams. Minnesota, Houston, St. Louis, and Los Angeles Dodgers all still lead their divisions. Tampa Bay previously led the AL East, now been overtaken by the Yankees. And Philadelphia previously led the NL East, now overtaken by the Atlanta Braves. So those, I think, were expected. But all the other four, it's kind of disappointing to see no changes yet.
Yeah, so just the parts that we weren't here for before we get into where we're at right now. I mean, you talked about it a lot. There's a lot of consistency throughout the last 4 months. Biggest trend as far as who's leading the division is just that the lead has grown slightly over the 4 months. It's increased little by little for the majority of the teams that were leading when we left. As far as key moves, I mean, Zach Greinke made a move to the Astros via trade, which I think is hands down probably the biggest deal that there was. Philadelphia stole Corey Dickerson from the hometown Pirates, which is a very solid move for a Philadelphia team that needs some extra help.
Still for a player to be named later, too.
Right, no return. So it's a very good move for Philadelphia. I don't know. Yasiel Puig goes to Cleveland for Trevor Bauer. He comes to Cincinnati. I mean,
that's a weird move to me.
Yeah, so a little bit. And after that, I mean, Mark Melanson was on the move, Scooter Jeanette. Guys like that, but no real – Marcus Stroman went to the Mets. I mean, there's just not a lot of big trades that happened at the deadline. Craig Kimbrell and Dallas Keuchel each signed over the summer finally, like we had talked about on the show, wanting to see them get their contracts. But, I mean, nothing groundbreaking, and I think that that's why you still see the consistency and the similarity to what we saw when we left.
Yeah, most of the exciting things that happen are just – rookies doing really well, stuff, people being brought up through the system. Greinke, obviously, big trade for Houston. Houston now has pretty much a starting pitching staff that is better than every other team in the league. They didn't need to make it better, but they decided, hey, if we can,
do it anyway.
Might as well not.
Yep.
The Phillies, they needed to acquire – they also got Jay Bruce at some point, but he's been off and on with injuries.
See, yeah, that's another one that's like –
that's like
all
a
right,
B-tier trade.
It's not a bad trade. It's a helpful player, but it's not anything earth-shattering.
And the reason that the Phillies needed to do that was Andrew McCutchen tore his ACL. He's done for the year. Was having a pretty decent year. And obviously, while he was playing, the Phillies were in first. Well, now they sit only 5 games above .500, and they have struggled in their most recent series against the Pirates. And Pirates are bad. They're really bad. They're 20 games under .500. Whenever we left, they were not that bad at all. And it's just been, it's like the All-Star break. They all decide to go on vacation and not come back. It's been horrendous. I find it very enjoyable and humorous, but I'm sure true fans, not like myself, probably are in quite despair over it.
My thing is I just felt, you know, like the pitching was what needed to change, and I'm not saying that they'd contend for a World Series had they done that, but certainly if you look at where they were before the All-Star break and you look at a relatively solid lineup, a team that hits pretty well, at least for average, rookies that are stepping into bigger roles, Josh Bell's maybe the National League MVP, statistically probably not because the Pirates are so bad. He leads the majors in RBIs.
He's up in the conversation, top five for sure. But
anyway, you're looking at a lineup that doesn't need a lot of work to be a playoff team and a pitching staff that needs all the work done to be a playoff team. They neglected the pitching staff. This is what you get. So that's probably all the more we'll talk about the Pirates until the season's over and we reminisce on how poorly 2019 right. went.
The Pirate season review. We sucked. Next.
Yeah, because, I mean, they have absolutely no impact on the playoff picture. But you talked about the Phillies. Let's go back to the National League East, looking at where we're at now. Because
that's exciting.
This division is jam-packed. The Braves lead it at 80-54, followed by the Nationals at 73-58. The Phillies, as you mentioned, slot in at number 3. And the Mets are a game behind them at 67-64 now. Obviously, 67 wins probably isn't going to get the Mets anywhere near the Braves, who currently have 80, but it's the wild card that's so interesting in the National League especially.
Yeah, the Braves, I think, have this division pretty well locked up. The Nationals have played a lot better recently, but...
The Nationals have an outside shot, but I'm like you, I like the Braves.
Yeah, it's a 5.5 game difference, and the Braves have not shown really any weaknesses. They were a good team last year, but I'm like, all right, they're young. Next year, they'll be good.
Here they are.
Yeah, here they are. They're clearly going to, you know, be in the playoffs one way or another. But like you said, the wild card race is what's interesting. Washington has the first wild card right now. They have a 3-game advantage over the Cubs, who have the second wild card. But then behind that, the Phillies are 2 games behind the Cubs. The Mets are 3 games behind the Cubs. A lot of big series coming up this weekend we'll touch about later. But the wild card is a lot more wide open in the National League than I thought it would be. I thought that the Nationals would not be that good of a team this year.
Agreed. You
know, they lost Bryce Harper. He's on a team in the same division as them, yet the Nationals are the better team somehow. They added Patrick Corbin, but, I mean, he's not the end-all be-all to the Nationals. Max Scherzer has missed, I think, about 5 starts this season due to injuries and stuff, so they still are finding ways. I'm impressed by it, actually. It's nothing I expected from them.
Yes, that's one that definitely surprises me. One other point to make before we, you know, talk about the wild card anymore. The Dodgers, you want to talk about having a division wrapped up. The Dodgers have about a 20-game lead in the division. They have 87 wins. The next closest is the Diamondbacks with 67, which is pretty incredible. But the Diamondbacks are in the mix for a wild card spot at 67 and 66.
They're 4 games back, which...
And the Giants are 66 and 67, and I still think it's too early to rule them out of a wild card position. Unlikely, because there's so many teams there.
Right.
But as far as games back, not out of reach.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, those numbers will dwindle away as we move through September.
Sure.
But as it stands right now, there's six teams that are not currently in a wild card spot that have a legitimate chance. Six. Phillies, the Mets, the Brewers, the Giants, and the Diamondbacks. I guess that's 5 teams.
Yeah, those are the teams that are 6 through 10 right now in the National League standings. They're all within 5.5 games of the second wild card.
And it's weird. I didn't expect... San Francisco was bad last year. I'm like, they're a team that is composed of mostly veterans that I guess are playing somewhat decently. And Arizona is a team who sold most of their good players. Paul Goldschmidt got traded in the offseason. Patrick Corbin is no longer on the team yet. They're 1 game above 500. Just why not? Might as well. And I'm disappointed by Colorado. I thought
did they drop off.
Yeah, they
Yikes.
Currently are 59 and 74, clearly in no position other than looking to have a nice offseason, I guess. But I thought they'd be a good team. They were a wild
card.
Were a wild card team last year. Actually had to play the 163rd game against the Dodgers to decide whether or not they'd win the division or not. And yet, just nothing this year.
Yeah, they're not winning a darn thing this year. I expect the Giants to be better than the Diamondbacks by the time the season's over, but I don't think either one of them get anywhere near the playoffs.
Yeah, their finishes are irrelevant, I think, to the playoff picture.
The Central, though, the Cardinals are leading with 73 wins, the Cubs have 70, and the Brewers have 67. So that's going to be an exciting race, and that might be the most important race in the National League because there's a very real possibility that depending on how things shape up here in this last month, if you don't win the Central, you might not get in. I mean, at 73 wins, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that that's the worst division leader by 7 games.
Yep.
In National League or American League.
Every team that leads a division in either league has at least 80 wins, except for the Cardinals.
So, I mean, all those teams are very much in it for a wild card spot, but if you're looking at the Nationals at 73 and the Phillies at 68, all the Phillies have to do is sweep somebody like the Cubs, and just like that, there's 2 National League East teams in the wild card spot. So the Central's going to have to pick it up a little bit.
Yeah, years ago, the Central contained 3 teams. The Cardinals had 100 wins, won the division. Pirates had 98, Cubs had 97. They were the 3 best teams in the National League. And then
3 best teams in the league, in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, they were phenomenal for no apparent reason. And now this year, people are scraping again. Milwaukee last year, like you said, maybe they just got hot at the right time because they're not as good. I mean, Christian Yelich is having a phenomenal season again. Yelich currently is hitting .330, which is, I believe, second or third in the National League. .424 on base percentage, 1.099 OPS, that is best in all of baseball. 41 home runs, 89 RBIs, 25 steals. He might have a 40-40 season, and his team still might not make the playoffs. It's weird.
See, and I think that speaks to the Brewers, because last year at this time, I think I had them, I believe, in the World Series. I don't know if you did or not, or had them coming close to it once we predicted for the playoffs.
For the playoffs, I did, but at this point, because, I wasn't sold yet.
Right, but it was because they were playing that well going into the playoffs that you and I both jumped on their bandwagon and felt like they could really make some moves in the playoffs. And you're looking at Yelich playing at the same type of level that he played at last year. Team around him just isn't doing the same things, and for that reason, the Brewers are slowly working their way out of contention.
And one weird reason is that I know this a lot because he is on my fantasy team, Josh Hader. He has a ridiculous fastball, has been a closer for them all season since Corey Kniebel has been injured, yet there was a stretch in between July and August he blew like five straight saves, which that's harmful to your team, obviously. If you can't have your best pitcher closing the game out for you, it's going to screw you over in the end. The Brewers also have a 39-run differential in the red. They have scored 39 less runs.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, which, considering the Reds are behind the Brewers by five games, they have a plus 14-run differential. That's wild. I don't know if the Brewers can do it, honestly, because not only do they have to worry about the Cubs and the Cardinals, but the whole NL East, like we've said, is still in the way of them. There's a lot of teams between them and glory, and there's not really time to make the moves to get there, I don't think.
That's the thing for these teams that are in that, you know, 5, 6, 7 type of area. You've got a significant number of teams that you have to jump. Even if you're 3 games out of a wild card spot, there might be 3 teams between you and that wild card spot, which makes things all the more difficult.
Would you say that the Cardinals are a lock for the playoffs?
No.
No, you think things are still moving?
I mean, I think they'll get into the playoffs, but I don't think that they're a lock, not sitting at 73 wins. Again, I mean, they have the same record as the Nationals, who currently have that top wild card spot. You know, say the Cubs and the Cardinals played this weekend, 3-game series, and the Cubs swept the Cardinals. Now, all of a sudden, you've got a tie for the division. Surely the Nationals pick up a win in that time. Now you go from a division leader to the second wild card, and there's 5 teams behind you. So no, I don't think they are. Not yet.
I'm convinced on the Cardinals. I've been convinced on them all season, but
like I said, I think they'll get in. I just statistically don't think I don't think they're a lock.
So while there's a lot of murky water to be had in the National League, the American League might as well start the playoffs right now, because there is very little discussion to be had about the American League. The Yankees are tied with the Dodgers for being the best team in baseball. They lead their division by 11 games. The Yankees are going to win the American League East. It's not really a contest. The Central, the Twins lead currently 3.5 games on the Indians. That race is really
exciting.
That's
a good one. Yeah.
And in the West, the Astros have a 9-game lead over the A's. It's the Astros division. The A's aren't going to compete with them this year. But so while those three positions obviously are locks, the wild card is not really that much to be discussed about. Cleveland currently has the top wild card spot, 77 wins. Oakland has the second one right now at 76. Tampa Bay also has 76 wins. They're a game back because of the game play difference. Then Boston is 6 games behind them. And after that, there is not a single other team in the American League that has a winning record.
Yeah, there's about as many teams competing for a playoff spot in the American League as there are teams playing for a wild card spot in the National League.
Yeah, honestly.
I mean, realistically, in the American League, you have 7 teams and you have 5 spots right now, mm-hmm. is what you're looking at. Like you said, the Yankees are in, the Astros are in. Not technically, but they are.
They're in.
They're where they need to be. They're in good shape. The Central, I don't think, is done. I mean, it's, like you said, 3.5 games. I think either team is capable of taking that division. The wild card is where it's going to be exciting. And for a team like Oakland or Boston or Tampa, that's all that you're worried about right now, because the division is out of the question.
And even for Boston, I don't think they're really in a position to get the wild card at all. They've been on the outs all season, 6 games back right now. They've done a little bit better recently, but Chris Sale's pretty much done for the season. And not that he was having a great season. He's still, you know, your best pitcher on your team. Eduardo Rodriguez is actually having a very good season, which nobody's talking about at all. JD Martinez and Mookie Betts obviously are still doing well, but they're third place. They're defending World Series champs. Tampa Bay was a team that I thought going into the season, this is going to be a good team. This will make the wild card, because I know the Yankees will be better because they spend about 6 times as much as the Rays. But still, the Rays are playing as well as they should. They have excellent pitching. They have great hitting, and it's a small ball, small market team, but they're getting the job done. And Boston has spent all this money on their players, and the results just aren't showing up as much as they'd like.
Yeah, the biggest reason that I still believe Boston can make a push is the because it's the exact opposite situation that you're looking at for a team on the outside looking in the National League. They don't have that many teams to jump. They only have to realistically jump two teams, and you're looking at six games is roughly what they're trying to make up on the two teams that they would need to jump. So, I mean, assuming that they can find another level in September and a couple teams in front of them struggle, I think they have an outside shot, but certainly not the favorites in my eyes at this point.
No. Moving on to the AL Central, they're kind of a situation like the NL Central. It might be if you don't win the division, you don't get in. Minnesota has actually had control for pretty much all summer. There was about a week or two where the Indians swapped up into first place, but somehow Minnesota is having an excellent year. I don't think anybody really saw this coming. I know I personally didn't. 2 years ago, they made the wild card game, but last year they, you know, they were, I believe, below 500 and not really that great. But this season, they just, they're slugging like nothing else. They lead the league in home runs, and they just seem to hit like five every game. It's incredible.
Yeah, if I recall, our discussion in May was we agreed that the Indians would win the Central pretty much uncontested with not a great record.
Which I think the not a great record part we might get.
Yeah.
But winning the Central uncontested, not at all. And moving into the West, Houston, like we've discussed, they have control. The A's, they sucked for the early part of the season. When we left, they were, I believe, last place or fourth in the division. And somehow, once again, they must be sipping the same water that the Rays are sipping. Small market team, low budget, everything going against their favor, yet they are getting the results they need. They're in the second wild card spot right now. Like I said, them and the Rays are basically flip-flopping, but they're doing the job. They're doing what needs to be done. Texas is not anywhere close to them, so and they're not really that close to Houston either. They're pretty much fighting for a wild card spot at this point, but they're doing well enough to get themselves in this position, though.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, not that the wild card debate in the American League, that race isn't going to be exciting, but maybe the most exciting race will be between the Yankees and the Astros to see who finishes with the best record in the American League, because as I look at these teams, I see the Yankees and the Astros as being hands down better than the rest of the teams in the field in the American League.
Oh, easily.
So if it comes down, if it works out the way it's supposed to, and it comes down to those two in the championship series for the American League, home field can make the difference, and right now they're separated by half a game.
Yeah, they have the same amount of losses, just Yankees have a few more wins. They played a few more games.
The wild card race is always exciting, but this year, more than anything, that American League top seed could be the difference maker.
I'm just going to hit on a few important players that have just been playing ridiculously. Like, there's not a last month to be had anyway before the season's over. The Angels, once again, not great. Mike Trout, he's...
Poor Mike Trout.
Yeah, he is just the best player in baseball, hands down. He's hitting .293, but he's on base .436, which they just walk him because they didn't want him to hit home runs off him anymore. 1.087 OPS. He has 43 home runs. That leads the league. Him and Bellinger and Alonso and Yelich have all been going back and forth, but Trout has the AL under his hand. 100 RBIs. I don't think it's really that close. Second guy I'd put in the AL MVP race, Rafael Devers. He's hitting .324, pretty good. 27 home runs, 103 RBIs, but I don't think it's really any contest. NL, much more interesting. I mentioned Yelich's numbers before. Cody Bellinger, he's hitting .309. 407 on base, 1.055 OPS, 42 home runs, 100 RBIs. I mean, he has a pretty much identical stat line to Trout, but could come down to the whether or not the Brewers make the playoffs or not and how well the Dodgers do. And the Cy Young race is, like we said, Astros, best pitching staff, hands down. Well, Justin Verlander, 16-5, 2.63 ERA. Who's right behind him? Oh, it's Garrett Cole, his battery mate. He has 15-5, 2.75 ERA. And I put a third guy in there for fun because I think threes are good. Charlie Morton was on the Astros, now on the Rays. 13-6, 3.11 ERA. All these guys are pitching well. National League, I got two from the Dodgers as well. I got Hyunjin Ryu, 12-4, 2.00 even ERA. He is, I don't know where he's found this talent from, but he's done excellent this year. Clayton Kershaw always up there, 13-3 with a 2.76. And Max Scherzer, despite the Nationals' success, is only 9-5 But the 2.41 ERA and 192 strikeouts will get the job done. So these races, I think, might be even more exciting than some of the standings races that we see going down to the wire here.
Yeah, and it's funny to see how many teammates may be going head-to-head to try to win some of these awards, like you said, especially with the Houston pitching staff. But, no, you hit on the key guys, and, I mean, the wild card race is going to be big, and the wild card race could help decide. I mean, if the Brewers get in, I think it's Yelich. If not, I think it's Bellinger because the Dodgers are playing so much better than everybody else in the National League. The Astros pitching is just unbelievable. The Yankees are an interesting team because they've battled so many injuries this year that I don't know that there's one guy that makes a difference there. It's just such a deep roster that they can overcome the injuries.
Yeah, it's funny. The league leader in all of Major League Baseball in wins is Domingo Germán. He has 17 wins with the Yankees. His ERA is above 4. He's only pitched 23 games this season. He's won 17 of the ones that he's pitched.
They just have a lot of guys doing lots of stuff when he's out there.
Then you have, they have Gleyber Torres. He's their best young player. Well, then Gio Urshela comes out of nowhere and takes over third base for Miguel Andujar, and he's now in the top 5 in batting average in the AL. DJ LeMahieu is their second baseman they signed. He is, I believe, second right now in batting average in the AL. It's just, the Yankees just have a way to get the job done. It's 20-some consecutive winning seasons. It's crazy. Like you said, though, you can't pinpoint it to one guy. It's a concerted team effort.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of good races, though, here in September, and it's going to be exciting to cover wild cards, divisions, individual awards. There's a lot of good stuff to come in Major League Baseball.
For right now, though, we are going to take our break, but coming after that, we have some NFL and a college football preview, so please stay tuned.
Welcome back to Sports Takeover, Matt and Chris on RMU Radio. retirement talk, Chris. Who is retiring? We know the big one, but there is another one that we want to talk about first.
No NHL talk to be had yet, but I got to throw it in there because I saw it earlier today. Cam Ward, former goalie of the Carolina Hurricanes, won a Stanley Cup with them, had a forgettable last season with the Blackhawks. He hung up the skates today. Happy trails, Cam Ward. Good career, good goalie, good guy. Happy to see you finally enjoy retirement.
Underrated, I would say, probably, throughout his time, just because Carolina was never all that relevant after they won the Cup in 06.
But right.
People tend to forget that. It was a long time ago. But, very solid career for Cam Ward, longtime Kane, and I believe he signed a one-day contract to retire with them. That's the way it should be.
Absolutely. Another guy who retired, I think everybody who follows any sort of news sources heard this by now, Andrew Luck, quarterback of the Indianapolis Colts, comeback player of the year in 2018. He is hanging it up after only 6 full seasons in Indianapolis, spent another one injured. It came out of left field for me. I had no idea that this was impending at all. It was just Andrew Luck's retired. What? Why? How?
Yeah, first of all, that hurts for the Colts.
Absolutely.
It's bad timing for them.
Horrible
it's horrible
timing.
It's really weird timing, too. It was because of the injuries he's battled, and I think he just had had enough, and I mean, that's absolutely understandable. I mean, the guy's made his money. He's good to go. And if you're really just not enjoying yourself, really battling these injuries year in and year out, I mean, it's the right move for him. And people, I would hope, will respect that. He got booed coming off the field in Indianapolis. I would like to think that given more information and a little bit more time, Colts fans will not react that way. But it just was so shocking to everybody. I mean, it's just bizarre. It's just weird.
Yeah, it was. The news actually broke Saturday night. I believe they wanted to do a press conference Sunday. But
yes, that was the original
Saturday
plan.
Night, the news broke during the Colts preseason game. And, you know, as social media spread stuff, people in the stadium were, you know, getting them information, you know, one by one. And we're all collectively like, what? Well, Andrew Luck was just sitting on the sideline like he had been for the other preseason games, just hanging out with the team. And all of a sudden, he's no longer a member of the team. He made 4 Pro Bowls with the Colts. I mean, he had a very good career with them.
Yes, he did.
But he did miss half the 2015 season. He only played 7 games that year. And like I said, all the 2017 season, he was injured this year in preseason, which I didn't think he'd probably even start the season, but clearly now he's not going to start at all. But it's wild. I'm still in shock about it, honestly. It's crazy.
It's just very, very odd. And now that he isn't starting, we turn to Jacoby Brissett.
Who?
Jacoby Brissett.
Former New England Patriot, had one season with the Colts in 2017 whenever Luck did not play. He led the Colts to a 4-11 record. They clearly were bad. He had 3,098 passing yards, 13 touchdowns, and 7 interceptions. It's not good. It wasn't good. The Colts are a better team now than they were 2 years ago with him, but still, to go from Andrew Luck to Jacoby Brissett, man,
yeah,
that's
rough.
Yeah,
I mean, Andrew Luck was one of the best quarterbacks in the league when healthy. And regardless of how Jacoby Brissett plays, he's not going to be Andrew Luck.
No.
But he's played 23 games in his career, 17 of which were starts. Completion percentage is right around 59, which is, yeah, it's not exactly what you want. 13 touchdowns to 7 interceptions. Not great, not horrible. 81.6 rating. The 5-12 record stings, but like you said, that's a Colts team that wasn't very good. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see, I think, what he comes out with this year. I don't think that it's quite as big a blow as some people think, simply because there were a lot of people that were on the Colts Super Bowl train, and I was not one of them. I mean, don't get me wrong. I thought they'd be a division contender and a serious threat in the playoffs, but I don't think I ever really believed they were going to be Super Bowl contenders, even with Andrew Luck.
No, I would agree with that. There's too many other good teams in the AFC for the Colts to be a contender, but I thought they could have won the division, maybe even won a playoff game after winning the division, but I don't think they have a chance to win the division now. It's Houston's division, and Tennessee, maybe. I don't know. Tennessee's a weird team.
Tennessee is a weird team. Jacksonville's a weird team. They're all weird teams South.
I'm over Jacksonville. They
I don't believe in them to win the division either, but it's weird. They're weird teams down there.
Yeah, Tennessee might contend, but Indianapolis.
For me, the Colts are somewhere around 7-9 and 8-8.
Yeah, I was thinking 8-8, probably.
That's where I'm at with them. Because when it comes down to it, they've still got a solid defense. Probably a top 10 defense. If not, certainly probably top half of the NFL.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
So they've got an above average defense. And offensively, I mean, there's some weapons there.
T.Y. Hilton.
T.Y. Hilton's a good receiver. And, I mean, who do you see backup quarterbacks go to a lot when they're put into action? Tight ends. Who do they have at tight end? Jack Doyle and Eric Ebron.
Eric Ebron had a phenomenal
season
last year.
He was a Pro Bowler last year.
And it was supposed to be just him signing with the Colts after being a failure, essentially, with the Lions. He fell off extremely much. Then last year, he just balled out.
So to me, there's enough there that with Jacoby Brissett, I think he can be good enough that this team can be decent. And for me, 7-9, 8-8, that's like a 2-3 game difference than what I would have had them at with Andrew Luck. Now, playoffs are a different story because obviously that 2-3 game difference puts them in the playoffs, probably winning the division, hosting a playoff game in the first round, probably most likely potentially winning that game. That's all out the window now. But in terms of regular season record, I think Andrew Luck to Jacoby Brissett, because of the team around him, 2-3 game difference.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of it. While we're in the division, another big loss for the whole season. We mentioned them already, the Texans. They're probably going to win in the division, but they'll do so without running back Lamar Miller. Tore his ACL in his most recent preseason game. He's done for the year. Beyond him, they have Deontay Foreman, but still, it's Lamar Miller is a, I would say, top 10 running back.
Didn't they trade for Duke Johnson?
They did also trade for Duke Johnson, too.
So that opens up the door for Duke Johnson.
But at the same point, I'd say Lamar Miller's easily top 10 running back in the league.
Yeah.
Maybe around, like, I don't know, I'll say 6th, 5th, somewhere around there.
But Duke Johnson can make up enough ground that I don't think that's going to really hurt the Texans.
No, and with the Colts not being as strong of a threat to them, I think they're in fine position, so.
Again, the AFC South, weird division. Every year seems to be a weird division.
Yep, and Andrew Luck, number one overall pick in 2012. So I'm like, 2012 draft class. There were some good guys in that draft class. Boy,
there were.
Let me tell you what's happened. So I looked at the top 10 picks, see who was taken by what teams. Of those top 10 picks, only one of them is currently with his team that drafted him. Number 9 overall, Luke Kuechly, is still with the Panthers. Andrew Luck, retired. RG3, no longer in Washington. Trent Richardson, been out of the league forever. Matt Khalil, offensive tackle for Minnesota. I think he's maybe with the Jets now. Houston, I think, maybe. He's not
somewhere
else. He's not with the Vikings. Justin Blackmon, I don't know if he really ever played with the Jaguars.
Yeah, not really.
He had legal problems. Morris Claiborne, no longer with Dallas, with the Jets now. Mark Barron was a safety for the Buccaneers. Now he's a linebacker for the Steelers. Didn't see that one coming. Ryan Tannehill, he was drafted number 8, the third quarterback drafted in that. He is now the backup in Tennessee. Luke Kuechly's still there, and Stephon Gilmore is still a great cornerback. Just instead of with the Bills, he's with the Patriots. But that top 10 leaves a lot to be desired.
Wow.
And even further on, I looked at all the quarterbacks drafted before, like the ones in the 6th round that really don't make that much of a difference. So Luck and RG3 went 1 and 2. Tannehill went 8. All three of them are gone. Another first round quarterback that was loved by no one. Brandon Whedon went to the Cleveland Browns at 22. He's done. Who came after him? You might think, oh, Brock Osweiler, who was actually talking with the Colts about being their backup. He went in the 2nd round to the Broncos. He was all right. He had
his moment.
He had a great defense that made him look significantly better than he was, but he did beat the Patriots.
The Texans found that out, didn't they?
Either way, he's no longer with Denver. He's just floating around out there, too. In the 3rd round, Russell Wilson, probably the best quarterback
there
of this draft
go.
Class. He is
no
just
kidding.
Excellent. Also in the 3rd round, Super Bowl MVP Nick Foles was drafted by the Eagles. Now, while he did have some mired history in the middle of his career, he came back to the Eagles and won the Super Bowl with them. And in the 4th round, the Redskins decided to take a second quarterback, Kirk Cousins, who somehow got a lucrative contract from the Vikings to not lead them to the playoffs. But as you see here, the top 3 quarterbacks, essentially, of this draft class now were the last 3 taken, not counting the 6th and 7th round guys.
Boy, it's funny that at the time the Redskins looked a little funny for taking both those quarterbacks, and now here we are, and they don't have either one of them.
Yeah, that's the even funnier part.
That's a fun trip down memory lane, isn't
2012
it?
Draft class. It was a good one, but there's some bad moments out there.
Oh, boy.
Moving ahead, this week, well, technically last weekend began at week 0, as they called it, for the college football season, but there was like 2 games. Florida played Miami, Florida won, barely, and Hawaii played somebody, and that was not really that important of a game. However, this week...
Now we get to the good stuff.
It's back, Matt. College football, it's the first week of the season. What have we got to expect for this season? How are we looking going in?
Well, I think there's, as with any college football season, a lot to be figured out. I think you can look at the poll all you want, and it probably isn't going to make a difference by the end, outside of probably 1 and 2, which will probably be constant the whole way through. Clemson and Alabama, They've been here for far too long. They will probably continue to be here, at least for this year.
They've been here my whole college career.
Yeah, Clemson will be starting at number one. Alabama will be starting at number two. Not going to be surprised if that's how it finishes or even if it gets flip-flopped, whatever. After that, we've got Georgia at 3, Oklahoma at 4, Ohio State 5, LSU 6, Michigan 7, Florida 8, Notre Dame 9, Texas to round out the top 10. That's according to the AP poll.
I'd say it's a pretty standard good indicator of the top 10. I think Notre Dame, I don't know, they're a weird team. Texas, too. I think the top 8 are very strong teams. I think they all have legitimate chances to make some noise this year, but like the problem that the SEC always runs into, they have maybe, you know, of the top 15, half the teams in there, but obviously they can't all contend. They have to play each other. That's the problem. Clemson received 52 of the first place votes. Alabama received 10 for whatever reason, because Clemson has, they went 15-0 last year. They won the championship against Alabama. They have the same starting quarterback, the same starting running back. They are a very strong, good, excellent team. Their whole defensive line got drafted into the NFL, though, which kind of stings a little bit, but still. How do you give 10 votes to Alabama? I don't understand.
People
it.
Like their Nick Saban.
Yeah, I mean, I do too, but Dabo time. Either way, yeah, the top 10 is really good. Then once you move on, there's some interesting ones in there. Oregon jumps in at number 11 after not finishing last season ranked at all. Further down, Syracuse is at 22, which I think is a little bit low. They actually had a really strong season last year. They moved up to 12th at one point, started a little bit lower, but they're a surprise team. Nebraska, they are 24th. They went 4-8 last season. What is this? What on earth is this, Matt?
Somebody knows something that I do not.
Yes, is somebody picking games already?
Not that I follow Nebraska football that closely, but I mean, 4-8, I think I have to see something before I put them in the top 25. So that one's a little bit of a head scratcher. UCF is in there at 17, which I thought was another notable one. They're still hanging around. They're starting in their usual spot because
they probably could be a little higher, I think.
Of course you think so. You like yourself some UCF. But the committees that vote don't like them so much, so they're at 17. 18 through 20 is all Big Ten, which is going to be interesting, I think.
Yeah, I think the Big Ten and Pac-12 always decide to flip-flop between like the lower half of the top 25, which conference wants to have half their teams represented in there. Because some years you got Washington. Like this year we got Washington, Utah, Oregon, Washington State, they're all thrown in there. And then the Big Ten's the other half, they got Iowa and Wisconsin and Michigan State and teams of that sort. So why they're in there, I don't know. I'm going back to Nebraska for a second because this bothers me a lot. They started last season 0-6. They finished 4-2, which I guess was good enough indicator.
That's why they're here, Chris.
You know what's even stupider to me is that I was looking, we'll get into it a little bit later, at what are some Heisman candidates this year, right? Nebraska quarterback Adrian Martinez is a sophomore who led his team to 4 wins and is, for whatever reason, a candidate on people's boards. What's going on here, people? It's Nebraska. They should be better. They are not better. They don't have anything. I don't know.
Again, somebody knows something that we don't.
They beat Illinois, Bethune-Cookman, Minnesota, and Michigan State last year.
What? Who?
Minnesota.
Yeah.
Illinois.
Yeah.
Neither team was good. Michigan State.
Sure.
That was a 9-6 game.
What was
game.
That other one?
Bethune-Cookman. They are an FCS game.
Come on.
Yeah. And
give them a loss just for playing that school.
They
Come
lost
on.
To Troy. I mean.
Yeah. We'll see. Keep an eye on Nebraska because apparently they're supposed to be better this year. I don't know. We'll see.
A team that I think is pretty much where they are and will probably stay the entire season, Penn State, is ranked 15th. I think they will move up at some point, and eventually they'll drop back down. And by the end of the season, they'll probably make their way back up to 15th. They do not have Trace McSorley anymore. That's a big, big problem. He was Penn State football as far as we're concerned, and now it's just looking rough for them, especially for how strong Ohio State and Michigan are. If Michigan can get over the fact where they don't know how to win the last games of the season, maybe they'll finally do it this year, but I don't know.
Yeah, no McSorley's a problem. No Miles Sanders is not going to help the cause. It also doesn't help that they have 3 pretty critical Big Ten games on the road, one of which is in Columbus, where they do not typically succeed.
It's a loss. It's going to be a loss.
It's going to be, for Penn State, another good season, but I don't see it being good enough. You're probably right about them being somewhere in that 15 range most of the year.
Another fun team that's in there, Iowa State, comes in at 21. They're, I don't know, all right, I guess.
Iowa State seems to be in and out.
They're a team
most
that
years.
They consistently make their way into the 25, and then what they do after that is, I don't know. But that's the top 25 as it mostly stands. Some other teams receiving votes. Missouri was on the outside looking in. Army had a very good season last year. Miami, I don't know. People think Miami are, I guess, as good as Nebraska when they clearly, neither team is good. But that's how the top 25 looks. And let's move on to what we think that the Power 5 conferences will look like come 3 months from now. How are they going to stack out at the end of the season? Who are the favorites? I'm going to start in the ACC. It's Clemson. There's nobody else. There is not a single other team. I would put money on it. I'm not going to bet on it because I don't want to lose money, but I would put money on it. Clemson will win the ACC without any difficulty. I mean, for crying out loud, Syracuse is the only other ACC team ranked, and they're 22nd. There's nothing. There's no competition there.
Clemson plays Syracuse. They play number 12 Texas A&M.
That'll be a good game.
And the other notable game, maybe, is Florida State. I think Clemson's in pretty good
shape.
Florida
State just has a name.
Will be surprised if Clemson loses a game.
Yeah, they...
I'll be surprised if they lose a game.
Oh, they can lose two games. They're not going to lose the conference. It's irrelevant.
They'll be in good shape. And, I mean, in the Coastal, Miami, Virginia, Pitt. Like, I don't know who you even want to win.
Pitt won
I'll take Miami in the Coastal just because there's not a lot of good competition there, but I'll take Clemson over Miami, I think.
Pitt won the Coastal Division last year, and they finished 7-7 on the season.
Right, when that's who Clemson has to take on to get to the college football playoff, Clemson's in good shape.
Yeah. Big 12, I think, is... I guess it's a little bit more of a race. The order I'm going in is kind of which are the biggest races, in my opinion. It's Oklahoma, I think, still in the Big 12. Yes, Texas is ranked 10th. They had a good season last year. But, I don't know, Oklahoma, they got Jalen Hurts now, the guy who was with...
I like that.
Yeah, he's a good quarterback. There wasn't room for him at Alabama. And, I don't know, there's a weird thing with the transfer portal where it's basically free agency for college athletes, which... It's weird to me. I think there's going to be some big changes coming with that. But either way, Jalen Hurts is now the starting quarterback for Oklahoma. So could Oklahoma have three straight Heisman winners? It's very potential. I don't think it's going to happen, but he will at least lead them to 10 wins, at least, I'd say.
I would agree. I mean, looking at their schedule, number 21, Iowa State is there, but that's at Oklahoma. They do travel to Texas.
Well, actually, the Texas game is usually at a neutral site, so that's not really...
Well,
all right,
there you go then. But yeah. even assuming they lose that game, Texas has to take on LSU.
That's
which
not good for Texas.
Makes some noise if they beat them, but I don't think they'll beat them. And I could see Texas being upset by somebody else in the Big 12 somewhere along the way. I don't necessarily
see
that.
Iowa State?
Maybe. Maybe they're at TCU. They're at Iowa State. Yeah, those could be tricky road games, but I'm with you. I like Oklahoma. Even if they were to lose to Texas, I still think... Oklahoma could make it happen.
Into the Big Ten, there is, in my opinion, it's Ohio State's to lose. They were excellent last year. I still think they should have got in over Oklahoma, but that's water under their bridge. We're not going to turn over an old rock on this one. But Ohio State has, while they do have a tough schedule, they have an excellent team. J.K. Dobbins is one of the best running backs in the whole league, or conference, I believe. NCAA, he could be a Heisman contender, but they have... what's his name? Justin Fields? He's their quarterback, right?
Good question.
Dude that transferred from Georgia. But either way, Ohio State is strong. No longer have Urban Meyer, though. That might be the only problem with them, but they start ranked in the top five for a reason, I think, there, and easily there. Michigan is a team that I want to believe in. I like Michigan. I think Jim Harbaugh is a good coach. He just cannot close. He cannot finish the job. I'd like to see it change, but... I'm not convinced it will. And Michigan State's always a team that makes noise. It seems like every other year they decide they want to be excellent or not. Maybe this will be the year, but I don't think there's really much after that.
Yeah, we already talked about Penn State. Michigan State, they're at Ohio State and they're at Michigan. For me, that's all you need to know. They're not getting out of those places with wins. Michigan and Ohio State are both good. Their game is at Michigan, which I think could go in Michigan's favor.
That's helped, certainly.
But everything else for Ohio State's home. Michigan State's at home. Wisconsin's at home. Penn State's at home. For Michigan, they have to go to Wisconsin. They have to play an Iowa team that Ohio State doesn't have to play. They've got a Notre Dame team on there that won't be an easy win. So I like Ohio State in the East.
But, Matt, they have to travel to Nebraska.
Oh, come on. I'll take Ohio State in the East. Nebraska or no Nebraska.
Yeah, like you said, Michigan, they have to play Notre Dame, which, I mean, if they win that game, that is excellent resume builder. I believe the two of them played last year, Notre Dame won. That's why Notre Dame, I think, got into the college football playoff.
Yes, I believe so.
And, yeah, but Michigan has to go to Wisconsin. Luckily for them, Iowa's at home because Iowa seems to knock off one ranked team a season. But, yeah, it'll be rough for them. I don't know. It's going to be close. Pac-12, I think, is it's an interesting conference. I think people don't care about the Pac-12 as much as they should, but there are certainly some teams that can make some noise. For me, I'm going to go with Oregon. Why? I don't know. They start ranked 11th. Justin Herbert came back, who was projected to be a first-round draft pick this past season, and he came back for his senior year. I think he can do very good things for Oregon. Oregon is a good team. I'm very sold on them. I think they will make a lot of noise. Utah is another team that people believe in a lot more than they should. I've seen a few people's college football playoff predictions have Utah in it, which I'm not going to go as bold to say that, but I guess some other people will be. And I like Washington State a lot, too. They had a very strong showing last year out of nowhere, and there's no reason to me why they can't have that kind of showcase again this year.
So I like Utah to come out of the South Division there in the Pac-12. I'm going to differ, though, in the North. I like Washington. And my issue a little bit with Oregon is that they've got so many games on the road. They're at Auburn, they're at Stanford, they're at Washington. And to me, that Washington game could be the decider in the North between who comes out of it, Oregon and Washington. So I like Washington, and I'm even going to go with Washington to win the Pac-12.
Well, the reason I think I picked Oregon was because last season when they played Washington, Oregon actually won that game when they were unranked. I think they're just going to build off of that. But yeah, Washington's schedule is, yeah, they don't really have any hard road games. BYU, Stanford, Arizona, Oregon State, Colorado. I mean, that's
right. They've got a lot of the tough matchups. Oregon, Utah, Washington State at their place. And I'm not totally sold on anybody in the Pac-12, but if I'm going to take my chances with somebody, I'll go with Washington, I think.
And the last Power 5 conference to discuss is the SEC, where pretty much all 12 teams, well, Vanderbilt's never in contention. South Carolina really aren't either, but pretty much everyone else is open game. I'm going to go with Georgia, actually, this year. I don't know. Alabama, for some reason, I don't think they have it this year. There's no reason for me to believe that. They have Tua Tagovailoa still, and they have Jerry Jeudy, but they have to go on the road at Texas A&M. They have to go on the road at Auburn. I don't see them winning both of those games. I really don't.
Boy, the SEC is so tough.
It's so close.
I have Alabama winning the West. With LSU right behind them.
Yeah,
I mean,
I like
Alabama,
LSU a lot too.
Alabama's got LSU at home. To me, that makes a big difference. But you're right. Texas A&M and Auburn are not.
Texas A&M is a hard place to
play.
Those
are not easy games. It's tough. And I mean, for A&M, Texas A&M has a brutal schedule. They're at number one Clemson. They're at home against number two Bama. They're at number three Georgia. They're at number six LSU.
What the heck are they doing to themselves?
That's a tough schedule.
Heck, if they come out of those four games with going 2-2, I think everybody will be ecstatic for them.
Yeah, and I mean, here's the thing in the SEC. If any of these teams decide that they're going to surprise some people and win some of these games, you could make it. There's, like you said, the majority of the teams in the SEC, you can make an argument for if they win their games. Like, strength of schedule is not going to be an issue in the SEC.
And especially when these teams are having A&M plays Clemson for no reason. LSU plays Texas. Why do you have to have such strong non-conference
right?
games? Alabama doesn't actually play anybody strong, which I don't know if anyone's ever going to talk about that, but I digress. Either way, yeah, these teams are just like, what's harder than playing the SEC? I know, playing teams in the top 10 outside of the SEC. That's even better.
Auburn, I mean, most of these games are SEC, but they've got number 11 Oregon. They've got number 12 A&M, number 8 Florida, number 6 LSU, number 3 Georgia, number 2 Bama. That's a tough schedule. But again, if they come out of there with wins, all of a sudden Auburn's a favorite for the college football playoff. Like any of these teams, if they string together, and I mean, maybe that'll be their downfall, is that no team will be able to string together a bunch of wins against these ranked opponents. But if one of them does, I mean, that's it right there.
SEC, while you can guarantee one SEC, maybe even two SEC teams are in the playoff. At least one of them will be. It's just, man, who is it going to be?
I am going to differ with you, though, in the East. And, boy, I went back and forth on this. I'm going to go with Florida. I'm going to take a chance.
Ooh.
I'm going to take a chance, and I'm going to go with Florida. I could see one loss. If both them and Georgia play to their potential, I'm going to say one loss each. The difference will be that for Florida, I think at number six, LSU is going to be tough. For Georgia, I'm going to say at Florida is going to be tough. For that reason, I'm going to take Florida to win the East and then lose to Bama.
They barely beat Miami the other day. I don't know.
They did.
It's wide open.
It's very wide open.
And for fun, their New Year's Six Bowls always include a team that is not in one of the Power 5 conferences. So I said, hey, let's throw our extra team in here because We're not going to sit around and pick the Sun Belt or anything. But the extra team I'm choosing is coming from Conference USA. It is the UAB Blazers. I told Matt earlier, I'm like, oh, I got a really good team for pick for this one, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. UAB, they don't play anybody too tough, and they last year actually had a pretty strong showcase. They had 11 wins. They were ranked for the first time in the whole school's history. This is only 2 years after coming back to play, but the only tough team they have on here is Tennessee. Everybody else is unranked, so if they can go 11-1, throw them in. Why not? It's great, and UCF might lose a game or here and there, so UCF's my strong team, and also looking out for Utah State, Boise State, and UCF. I think those are teams that could also represent that last team, but UAB is my crown jewel for this one.
That's interesting. Mine's not really a stretch, and maybe you didn't want me to go this direction, but I'm going to go with Notre Dame.
Boo.
You don't like Notre Dame?
I don't. Right? I want something more fun.
Well, I'm going with Notre Dame just because if you look at their schedule, they play number 3, number 7, and number 25.
And they're going to lose all three.
Well, but I don't know about that. I could see them knocking off 25 Stanford.
If Stanford's ranked 25 at that point, they could be up to 11 or they could be down to 18th.
People are a little bit higher on USC. I don't know if I am, but if they turn out to be something, Notre Dame's got them on the schedule too. You know I don't believe in UCF.
You don't. Never have. Never will.
And that's really the only other one that was ranked. Memphis is one that I thought about, but again, I don't totally believe in. To make the climb the whole way up there is a pretty tough thing to do, and to me, Notre Dame might fall away and still be the best non-Power 5 team out there. And I'm sure that that's kind of the easy way out. It's not as fun as UAB. But to me, I just realistically don't see anybody else being able to make that type of a jump.
Can they just join a conference and quit being dumb finally once and for all?
Hey, tell your UCF friends to play some real teams, because all they have is Stanford and Pitt. That's all they've got on the resume.
Ooh, Pitt. Oh well, either way, that'll be fun. Some Heisman candidates to hit on real quick. Tua Tagovailoa, I think, has to be the front runner. He finished second last year, made a strong case last season to win. No reason why he shouldn't be in the conversation this year. Bama's going to be great. He'll be great with them. Another guy on Alabama, actually, receiver Jerry Jeudy, last year has 68 receptions, 1,315 yards for about 20 yards a catch, and 14 touchdowns. He will have a breakout season with Tua. They could put up 50 touchdowns each. Not each, but you get what I'm getting at.
Yes.
They will be very strong together. I like those two. Running back Jonathan Taylor from Wisconsin led the league NCAA in rushing last year, about 2,200 yards, 200 more than the next closest. All Wisconsin ever does is run. They will continue to run for the last 20 years and the next 20, but he's very good. Trevor Lawrence, freshman Sunflower kid out of Florida, plays for Clemson, has great hair, and 30 touchdowns and 4 picks in his first season as their starter. Clemson's great. He's great. He'll do it again. And another, maybe a little more of a dark horse, running back DeAndre Swift for Georgia. Last year, he had over 1,000 yards while splitting the time with running back Elijah Holyfield. Well, Holyfield is now drafted in the NFL, and it is Swift's domain all there at Georgia. So maybe him and Taylor can compete for 2,000 yards, but those are the five I like to look at right now.
Just a few more to add just real quick. To me are some quarterbacks that if they can get their team to a college football playoff level, they could be in the running. Justin Herbert from Oregon, Jake Fromm from Georgia, Jalen Hurts from Oklahoma. To me, those aren't guys that are shoo-ins to be there, but if they can get their team in the college football playoff, that could be the difference.
Absolutely. So that's our college football preview. Of course, more to be covered throughout the season as all of our predictions look stupid in 3 months, but for now, they look great to me, I think. Moving ahead into quick picks, we're going to start in college football. The only ranked matchup this week becomes number 11 Oregon at number 16 Auburn. I'm going to go with Oregon in this one. Like I said, really high on them. Like that Herbert came back, I think they're going to win this one, start off the season strong.
I'm going Oregon as well, also because of Herbert. It's too early in the season for me to totally believe in either of these teams, so I'll go with the quarterback that's got the experience. Virginia at Pitt, the only other college football game that we could bring ourselves to pick, and it's just because Pitt's the hometown team here. I'll go with Pitt. They were pretty good at home last year, took care of business against teams that they should beat. I'll go with Pitt.
Yeah, I'm going with Pitt as well. They beat Virginia last season. Virginia's kind of hovering around the 35th spot, but I don't know. They're even enough, but it probably won't matter in the long run. I'll pick Pitt for this one. MLB, a lot of good series to happen this weekend. Hit on a lot of the important races we talked about. The Brewers play 3 at Wrigley this weekend. I'm going to pick the Cubs in this one. They're better at home. They're better than the Brewers. I like them a lot here.
Cubs for the same reason. Both these teams need a push. I think it'll be the Cubs that get that extra game this weekend. Mets at Phillies in a big one, both in the NL East and in the NL Wild Card. I'll go with the Phillies. Again, I just think they're a better team. The Mets are on a four-game skid. Give me the Phillies.
Best way to break a four-game skid is by taking over a series against the Phillies. I think that's what the Mets will do. Phillies have looked, other than tonight, they look bad against the Pirates. They're just not playing as strong as they should. Mets are a lot better recently. I'm going with New York into the AL. Big wild card implication here. The Indians travel to Tropicana to play the Rays. I'm taking the Rays in this one. They're good at home. They got that it factor for some reason. I like them a lot. I'm going with Tampa here.
I'll go with the Indians. They're trying to make a push for that division. They're not looking at the wild card just yet. I'll go with the Indians. Into some soccer. Tottenham at Arsenal. I'm going to call a draw here. It's early in the season.
Draw?
Yeah, both of these teams are still trying to find their way a little bit, get into a groove. Statistically, they've been pretty even to this point. I'll go with the draw.
Yeah, both of those teams should be better than they are. Both have underwhelmed me, and I assume their fans greatly up to this point. I'm going to go with Arsenal in this one. I don't know. Tottenham just, they don't seem to have it this year. Arsenal doesn't either. This is a game that will get one of them off on the right foot, hopefully. So I'm going to go with Arsenal. Staying in soccer, but moving across the ocean back to MLS, we have Atlanta United against Philadelphia. These teams are tied right now for the Atlanta, I believe, has the top overall spot, but they are tied in points for first and second in the East. I'm going to go with Philadelphia just simply because they drew last time they played and that Philadelphia has home field for this game.
I'm going to go with Philadelphia as well because of the home field. They're 9-2-3 at their place. Atlanta's 5-8 on the road. I'll go with the Philadelphia Union.
Last but not least, you've missed them. I know we want to hear some more great ones. Bowl predictions were back and probably worse than ever, but hey, we still got to do it to do it. I'm going to start in Major League Baseball for this one. Mike Trout, he is just amazing, great, super. Unanimous MVP I'm calling right now. Nobody else. I said Devers is up there, but I threw someone else up there to make it even look like a race. It's not a race. Trout has it. He is, by all means, the best. He will win unanimous MVP here.
I like that one. I'm going to go to the NFL with a guy that you don't like. Jacoby Brissett will be a top 15 quarterback statistically this season. I talked about the weapons he has around him, T.Y. Hilton, Eric Ebron, Jack Doyle if he's healthy. I think Jacoby Brissett could be a little bit better than people give him credit for.
To be fair, top 15 does count 15th, so I think he'll probably slot in somewhere around there.
Well, hey, but top 15, half of the league.
We'll
He's going to be all right.
Moving back into college football, there will not be any double conference representation in the college football playoff this year. We won't see two SEC teams, no two Big Ten teams. Well, we certainly won't see two ACC teams, but I'll throw them in there anyway. The four teams, none of them will come from the same conference.
So for me, I'm going to go with the college football playoff as well here. I think before next season, it's going to be expanded. Because
sure
every year we've got teams in 5-8 that look like they could easily be 3 or 4. We've got teams like Clemson and Alabama that are the top seeds every year. I think we want to see some more variety. We want to see some other teams showcased. I think by this time next year, people will catch on. The committee will catch on and it'll be expanded.
I hope it needs to happen. Anyway, last bowl prediction will be, who are the college football playoff? Which four teams will it be? In this order, I believe Clemson will be the top team, Oklahoma will be second, Georgia will be third, and Ohio State will be fourth.
No Alabama.
No.
All right.
I hope not.
For me, number one is Clemson, number two is Alabama, number three is LSU, and number four is Oklahoma.
I like LSU. I hope they make it.
I think they very well could.
Either way, a lot of college football will be played. I'm sure some of these teams will break our hearts, but hey, that's the fun of the sport.
That is more than the time that we were supposed to have. We just had so much to cover. We were so excited to be back.
So fun.
Thank you for tuning in. We're happy to be back. We'll be back at the same time next week. Until then, have a good night.